Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast, Marler Monday.
My bad.
I didn't know what time we were starting. It's been so long since you've been on the show.
It's been 2 weeks.
Bitch.
Damn it. We got 43 minutes for the rest of our lives. There's no one in the comment section. I've been here for 11 minutes just sitting here scoping the scene. Also, I turned down a much bigger show to be here today, Mike, just so you know.
You did?
Yeah.
Can I guess the show?
Sure. It's not hard. It's not very hard.
Fox and Friends.
Fuck no. No, Crane and Cone reached out about me doing a debate with Ari Wasserman.
Oh my God. I'd watch that.
The hell yeah. I mean, I was very eager to do it. And I was like, I was pretty specific about the fact that I was like, I would love to do it because I would love to have a conversation. I don't even know if conversation is the right word. I love, there's few things I love more in life than being right. And I know that most of the arguments that have been made by Ari Wasserman about the SEC over the past year or so are not right. And I wanted to argue about scheduling and his take that was on that. And I thought that's what it was going to be about. And then they informed me that it was going to be more so who's a better conference. And I did not have a feel for that as much because I don't necessarily agree that the SEC is the best conference right now. I think they have to prove that again this year. So I turned it down and now I'm here. So you better fucking appreciate me because I could have made a big name for myself getting yelled at on three today and going lashing out irrationally on somebody that I hate more than anyone else on Twitter.
Wait, so you bitched out? That's what I got from that story.
No, not at all. No, but well, the conversation was going to be about, well, I think I like the front half.
I saw Marler on America's Most Wanted. Was that it?
Yeah, there it is. No, the conversation, like if the conversation was going to be about actual scheduling and the horrific take that he had, I was all about it. I think that he has been one of the more biased people against the SEC from a national's perspective for quite some time. And I feel fine. Like, I don't think that's like a huge secret because it's in the same way that you poke at people. I think he does that and gets a lot of enjoyment out of it for the SEC. But I did not want to get into a situation where it was like, hey, we're going to argue who's better, the SEC or the Big Ten, because that's not the argument I really care to make. So, right. I did not bitch out, but I will also tell you this, like there was parts of me that was like thinking about it going into it, especially since the parameters of the argument changed before we both agreed. I did not want to go into a situation where an On3 employee and another On3 employee were hosting a debate. And then me, little old Chris Marler, is on here and potentially being a sacrificial lamb for other people's entertainment. So I just, you know, if you want to say it that way, fine. But I do think that at some point in the future, we will make that happen.
Okay. So you bitched out. All right. You know who else bitched out? Tennessee's offense at home against Alabama. You haven't even brought it up. I had to bring it up. I can't believe this.
I know. You talking about your offense? Well, I mean, Amit was out. Okay. I think because he got injured. Let me start by saying this. There's few things I enjoy more than watching Tennessee fans bitch about refs. Just very few things. I mean, because it's fucking hysterical. And I don't care how this sounds. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Josh Heupel and the program that he's building. I think they're going to be really good this year, as I've said a bunch. But after that 2022 Bama game, there's never a part of me that will ever, 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 ever feel sorry for Tennessee and complaining about officiating or the refs. So on Saturday, it was shocking to see Alabama foul so little. I will also say that Tennessee was just mugging people in the paint, as always. The Tennessee basketball, especially in Knoxville, they are more physical defensively than the football team has been in years. It is the most physical defense, and I was a little bit surprised, but I also wasn't, because that was a very, very Rick Barnes like esque performance from them offensively. I mean, you look at, since Nate Oates has been in Alabama, Alabama has never scored over 78 points against Tennessee. They have led the nation in scoring for the past 3 years. They've averaged over 90 points per game in all 3 years. They have never scored over 78 points in a game against Rick Barnes in Tennessee. So that part wasn't surprising, but blowing a 13-point lead at home surely was.
It was, but does it even matter? Does it even matter? I mean, it's regular season. Basketball's all about the tournaments.
Yeah. And, you guys usually do so well in those, so I bet you're really, really excited for it.
Well, let me. You can mock Tennessee all you want, but point being, isn't it just Florida just going to dominate all our asses anyway? I mean, who the hell cares who's second place? I don't even think second place got a shot, do they?
It feels like that is the case. Is this new? I did not realize that Missouri was going to be a 4 seed.
Yeah, this is updated. This is the SEC tournament here.
Wow. Okay.
With two games remaining.
I don't see South Carolina. Are they getting invited this year? Or I think Arkansas, Kansas. Oh my god. Yeah. So Florida, the thing for Florida is they are really fucking good. And it really does kind of feel like you can talk me into Arkansas making a run. I think Tennessee can make the Sweet 16. I'm stupid enough to believe that Kentucky can still do something with the roster they have. I think that's pretty much it, right? Am I missing someone? I said Arkansas, Bama for sure. I think they can make it to the Sweet 16 or further, especially if they're shooting well. Here's the thing. It felt like this last year, Mike. It felt like this last year, even with how good Auburn was, how good Tennessee was, how good Bama was. It felt like it was going to be Florida's conference championship to win or lose, and we're all just sitting here playing for second place. And that's exactly what it feels like now. They have gone on a fucking tear, and they are, what, 14-1, I believe, or 15-1? They have 14-2 in SEC play. Of those 14 wins, I believe only two have been within single digits. They've won however many games in a row since that Auburn loss by 19.7 points per game. And it's a really, really impressive team effort, because I kind of thought Boogie Flanagan was going to go down there and kind of put up some of the numbers that we see from Darius Acuff about how good he is. And he's just been an incredible facilitator and distributor of the ball and all that kind of stuff. And Hauk has been really, really good. When he's off, Condon seems to step up. And here's the thing that's crazy too, is if they want to beat you from outside, they will. If they want to beat you from inside, they will. I mean, they put up in that game against Arkansas, they were a 10.5-point favorite. And I was like, man, that feels like a lot. I mean, Arkansas is really good. They've played really, really well. Their only loss, it seems like recently, was to Alabama on the road. 10.5 is like a lot of points. They won by 34. They were around an 8.5-point favorite at the end of January against Alabama. I thought that was a lot. They won that game by fucking 23 or 27. So, you know, they are very, very good. And I tell you, the big thing for me too is I don't know if they – like I've seen some projections where they're a 1 seed. I don't know if they're going to get a 1 seed. They absolutely should if they win out the rest of the season and then a regular season and get through the conference tournament unscathed as well.
Mm-hmm. What team you didn't mention there that has a shot, right? Auburn.
They're so fucking bad. It's hilarious. Ole Miss had lost 10 straight and they got their ass beat at home. You know, here's the thing, Mike. There's a lot of places where having a Nepo hire and having a Nepo baby run your organization or program works for you. And a lot of places in Alabama, John Deere Green, tractor places, local Chevy dealerships, a State Farm, insurance place like that. I mean, those are all places where nepotism is fine. And we've seen it happen over and over and over again. Maybe we keep it out of college basketball in the state of Alabama, at least, because anytime, and I really love Bruce Pearl. I think he's a great, great coach. And I didn't think that this was going to be some seamless transition. But maybe next time you're making a hire, if you're Auburn, because you've been so good at it in other sports. You know what I mean? You're so good. At least you've had enough experience, because you guys fucking do it every 3 years. So if you're going to make a hire in basketball, maybe what you do is get a firm, maybe get some consultants, maybe get some people that are important around the program, or maybe Charles Barkley, and say like, hey, what do you think is best? Like what is the best person you could bring in here to continue the success that we've had? Cause it's been so good. We've made two Final Fours in 6 years. We've started like labeling ourselves as an everything school, even though we're still consistently only good at one thing at a time. None of those are football, by the way. Uh-oh. Allie just walked in.
While you're mid trashing Auburn.
She said they can hear you, you have a microphone. And another thing. So, you know, maybe next time what you do is you get some of those people to give you their opinion or some advice on who you should hire, instead of having Bruce Pearl and his son strong arm the program 42 days before the first day of basketball season and see how it works out, because it's not been good.
And he's just out here hating on Miami of Ohio. You know what?
It's so weird that they are even like, why they're undefeated. I mean, I don't even understand why you would, how you could possibly hate them.
You know who's not undefeated, Chris?
No.
A&M's basketball program, since you shat on them.
They are. And so it's the same thing I say, I feel like, in every sport. It's just like, it just, there's times when you don't, I feel bad for even saying this, because Billy Lucci is texting us as we speak, by the way, if you've checked your phone. There's times when I look at like teams, and I've always just said this, especially going into the postseason, you just want to know what you're made of going into the postseason. And A&M played nobody in the non-conference, and they played really all of the easiest teams on their schedule in the first part of the year. It's funny, because one of the teams that I brought up, I was like, they haven't played anybody. And then they lost to Bama, and I was like, there you go. Now you've played someone, Aggies. And no, I don't. I hate when we argue about things that aren't factually true, because A&M fans want to get in their feelings about – listen, here's the deal. I said that you didn't play anybody. They lost to Bama by 3 points on the road. One of the arguments that was pushed, that I was given in pushback, was, one, you're fat, which is fair. Two, you're retarded, which felt unnecessary, but also it seemed to be like a recurring theme, because multiple people said it, they were A&M fans, in the comments. And then three, well, we beat Auburn. Hey, guys, guess what? Auburn sucks, so that's not a huge win anymore. Also, since that game, when they were 7-1, they've gone 2-6, and they've lost to every good team they've played. And this is going to shock you, Mike. This is going to shock you. What if I told you that in the 8 games they've played since then, right, they've had 2 wins and 6 losses. If I told you that 6 teams they played were tournament teams and 2 weren't, where do you think those teams would lie in terms of the wins and losses for A&M?
Not good.
Shocking. Shocking. The good teams they play beat them, and the bad teams that they play, they find a way to win. So congratulations.
Hey, shout out our buddy Carl Junkins for the donations. Tennessee's a softball school. Suck it, Barler.
They are really good at softball. You know who else is Oklahoma? Have you seen their numbers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you have you?
I've studied it before we jumped on here.
That's cool. So they have hit 86 home runs in 21 games. Damn. And they are on pace to break their all-time record. And as of right now, the 86 home runs would rank like 9th or 11th. 9 or 11, one of those two numbers. In all time for a season for Oklahoma softball, if the season ended today and they've played a third of it. Breaking news, Marlon's retarded and Auburn sucks. You want to talk about Iran or what?
No, I do want to ask you about this. We talked about it. I'm trying to get this guy on the show. I don't know if he'll do it. And again, because I don't know him. I don't know anything bad about him. Mm-hmm. This is not a bad take or anything. But Ralph Russo from The Athletic, he tried to predict who the head coaches were in 2030 for everybody in college football. Did you see this? Who he had South Carolina head coach?
Kalen DeBoer.
Glenn Schumann.
I could see that. I mean, I hope not. But I mean, also, I don't know if anyone's stock has fallen off more than Glenn Schumann. And maybe he needs a couple more years to see how it's done at the highest level under Kirby Smart. I mean, he clearly is very good at developing talent and all that kind of stuff. But that's a guy that I wouldn't have been. If you would have told me he was going to be the successor to Saban, I would have sat there and said he'd probably be a placeholder for it. Like, he would not be there forever. But mm-hmm. I thought, I would have felt like that would have been a good transition. You could have talked me into thinking that was a good transition. Now, like most transitions we hear about, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad and regretful. So I don't think you ain't ran in years. When did I say I ran? Oh, Iran. Pretty good. Pretty good. That's cool. Anyway, so I think it's actually
getting creative with the fat jokes.
That's really good. That's really good. I look at, he signed it LOL as he laughed at his own shitty joke. That's funny. Lady Balls always have my heart. They are really, really good. Oh, boy. 7 texts from Allie.
Uh-oh. Somebody's in trouble.
Yeah, you are screaming. Okay.
You are screaming. I don't know. I don't know.
Anyway,
sometimes you just got to respond to the comments, you know? Mm-hmm. And then for Alabama.
What about him? Oh,
predicted head coach, current SEC coach, but not Alabama's head coach.
Kirby Smart.
John Summerall.
Ooh, no. What? I don't mean, well, I don't know if I say, ooh. Why would it, like that? That's such a fucking useless exercise. Like, why would, I mean, that seems pretty stupid, but with the Schumann thing, I don't think that's super far-fetched for South Carolina if Beamer can't win. The big question for Beamer is not only can he win this year, it's can he continue to win in the upcoming years? And I really do think he can. I think what they're putting in place this year and next year especially, and also what's in the state recruiting-wise, I think that they are going to be built to succeed. Here's the big thing for Shane Beamer, my pitch, and disregard the hat if you want. Here, I'll change so you can't see it. So I don't look like a Hummer. So if you are making a pitch for why Shane Beamer will be there in a couple of years, this year, you talk about like the investment they put into like securing a roster and building a roster. There's four main players that I think probably eat up around $8 to $9, maybe $10 million of that roster. And that's Lenora Sellers, obviously. That's Dylan Stewart. That's Nick Harbor. And then that's Jacarius Peak. Now, I would say the number's probably around $8 million. And Jacarius Peak is going to play in the
what's
in the
his
fall.
Basketball budget?
That's still unbelievable to me. I was on my show talking about it, and I was like, you know, I want to believe that Shane Beamer didn't have them out here playing basketball in some team organized 3-on-3 tournament. And all the comments were like, he literally bragged about it the other day on Ari and Andy. And I was like, fuck. So that part sucks. I think, you are the share of this podcast. Thank you so much. What a huge, huge, awesome compliment to receive. So the thing with Beamer moving forward is if you're talking about, I think they're going to be able to win 9 games this year, at least, because I think that the talent they have, and I think for the first time in a while, you're looking at a strength of schedule that's not even ranked inside the top 15, which may sound, well, you know, it's still top 20 or whatever, but like as a South Carolina, you know, person, you've sat here and watched them be seemingly in the top 5 and 10 every single year for decades. Now you get Georgia on that schedule, you get A&M on that schedule. Both those games are at home, which I do love. You really struggle with both of those rivalries. Tennessee obviously will be without a new quarterback. I think 7 of the 10 power four teams they play this year will have a new quarterback they're breaking in. I like that. But the big thing again is if South Carolina is put, let's just call it around number $8 million, which is a significant amount of their total NIL budget and what do you call it, roster budget for this year's team. Well, that's tied up in four players, Sellers, Stewart, Harbor, and Jacarius Peak. Most likely, you're going to have all four of those guys gone to the NFL next year. So next year, you might lose them. I think you'll have a successful year. But then we just start talking about building for the future. All that money is freed up, and now you can go right back into the portal and go get more players and better players once again and be able to spend some money, which is something they haven't really done or been able to do in the past couple of years. So I think that the blueprint for success down the road and in the long run for South Carolina is absolutely there.
Now, I know we don't want to live in this world, right? But if it doesn't work out for Carolina this year, now, we probably shouldn't make blanket statements, but I think that would be good evidence that maybe we don't give a good chunk of the money to four or five guys. Does that make sense? Like
yeah,
maybe we spread it a little bit better.
Well, but I will say also, I think you're right. I think this is a interesting situation they're in because they're, I don't think South Carolina is ever going to spend $40 million like a Texas or Texas A&M or LSU. I don't see that happening. What they've been able to do, and I keep bringing this up too, is the fact that, like, if you look at what they did in the portal, like, Jordan Seaton is the number one offensive tackle in the portal, right? Right behind him was Jacarius Peak. You look across the SEC, Mike, you know just as well as I do. Alabama has as many offensive line question marks going into next season as South Carolina. They're just as desperate, and they probably, I wouldn't say probably, they almost certainly have deeper pockets than South Carolina, and you beat them out to go get a guy like Jacarius Peak, top 10 player, all that kind of stuff. They did a really good job in the portal, finishing with the top 20 class. Well, at least it was until like the last couple of days. I haven't checked it in forever. They had a top 20 recruiting class once again for high school kids they brought in. They had a really – that's back-to-back years they've been able to do that. They brought in really, really good athletes in the previous class. They're now going to year two, especially the receiver position. They retain, though, on top of all of those two things, they were able to have their retention. I would put it at the top of the SEC or near the top of the SEC in comparison to some of the other teams, like what they were able to keep at quarterback and returning starts, returning snaps. And from like, I know that they were a bad football team last year, but every fucking team in the country would want to at least go after Dylan Stewart, would probably, you know, generate some buzz to look at Nick Harbor. It would probably also, like, you know, a lot of teams that who need a quarterback would look at Lenore Sellers and say, absolutely, that kid could come here. So when you have players like Sellers and Stewart that would have ranked in the top five in the portal overall, and that's from Clark Brooks, not me, who does all the evals and rankings and evals for the portal at On3. If you kept those two guys on top of getting to Akarius Peak, you were able to keep Josiah Thompson, you can shift him back out the right tackle. I think they're going to be much better.
Well, they better be.
Yeah, for the love of God. It would be really bad.
I don't think we could take another season of them going 4-8 with you.
I can't. And I talked to somebody about this a while back, and I was like, you know, somebody that's like lived in Columbia, South Carolina, my family still lives over there. I really enjoy pulling for South Carolina. I'm a big fan of Shane Beamer. I can't do another 4-8 season. And somebody was like, well, no, but then you get to do your show, based, you know, and do like a coaching search. And I was like, I would rather fucking win games. I would rather them win games than have to do that. So you're right.
Mm-hmm. All right. And let me know if you agree or disagree with this.
Disagree.
Sticking with Carolina. I put Carolina in a tier along with Florida, Auburn, and Tennessee going into the season to where I don't have any of those as playoff teams, but I think if some question marks or uncertainties that we have today, if they get answered, they could make the playoffs. So I'm giving those teams, you know, roughly a 40% shot right now to make the playoff. Do you think that's fair? And would you count Carolina in the same class, Tennessee, Auburn, and Florida?
I would almost break that tier up into two tiers. And I would have Tennessee and South Carolina ahead of Florida and Auburn for sure. Because, and listen, I like what Auburn brought in, but is it enough that they're going to, I mean, they lost a fuck ton of talent off that team. And now you can listen, you can look at that and say, well, they probably didn't have that much talent if they only made it to, you know, they only won five games. And I fully get that, but like, they got gutted offensively and lost a lot. Now I think they're going to be fine off on offense because of who the head coach is. And I love that they were able to retain DJ Durk. And I think that'll be a big, big answer to some of the questions they have going into next year. But a playoff is that is, I mean, Auburn's never done it. I don't like
here. Neither has Indiana.
Yep. And if we're going to compare Auburn to Indiana, that might actually be a very, very good comp because just like Indiana did for years, Auburn hasn't had a fucking winning season in 5 years. So it's like, I mean, like I do think that I love the Golishire. I think he's going to be good for them. And I kind of love the attitude of like, you're with us or against us. Like, we're going to go fucking win games and they're not going to be scared of anybody because that's his mentality. I mean, the guy from the Russian gulag is not going to go into, you know, Davis Wade Stadium and be all scared and nervous and anything like that. But I do think they'll be better. It'll be interesting. I hate that first game against Baylor is in Atlanta. I know it's a good moneymaker for him, so I understand why Cohen did it, but I don't love it. Byron Brown is going to be interesting because Brown he's been really good, but if you watch that Bama game, like just use that example, and I know he played a lot of other games, but if you watch either of those games, especially the one in 2024 in Tuscaloosa, if that dude hits two deep balls, like one or two deep balls, they beat Bama, and he just could not do it. So I wonder what it looks like against SEC competition, because as we saw last year with John Matera, a player that comes in from a Group of Five school that has a ton of talent, ton of physical talent, and a great offensive mind that's going to be coaching him, whether it be a coordinator or as the head coach, it sometimes there's still hiccups.
What does your door say, Ronnie wants to know? Is that Dixieland Delight?
Yeah. It's on my door. It's the wall.
Or is it quiet? Maybe that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
What about Alabama? Would you have them as a like? I put them in a class. Now, you're totally going to disagree with this because you're so far up Kiffin's ass. But
yeah, sure.
I put Alabama, A&M, and LSU in the same tier. They need things to go right, but they have the pieces and they. You know, it's not far-fetched to put them in the playoff, if that makes sense.
I know what hat I'm wearing right now, but I'll just be as clear about this as possible. And I've been saying this for several years. If LSU is going to be taken seriously, I think they have to compete for a national title in year one under Kiffin because of the investment that was made to this year's roster. There's no more guarantees anymore about like if you go land the number one recruiting class in 2014, there's reason to believe it. Well, even if they don't all contribute immediately down the road, you're going to have these guys that are going to be able to, you know, turn into something and five stars that are going to be able to play here and top 100 recruits, all that kind of stuff. That's all gone now. Like everything is a 1 year turnover. And if you're looking at LSU and you're thinking, well, hopefully they compete for a spot in the playoff, that's a joke. They have to compete for a national title, in my opinion, with the investment they have put into this year's roster. I think they're going to do that. I think they're going to compete for a spot in the playoff and a national title. But until they beat that team, go back, until they beat that team in the second weekend of November or the first weekend of November this year, there's no part of me that is going to fully buy into LSU being some top-tier SEC program, because even in the years that we've given so much shit to Kalen DeBoer and to Alabama and some of these other teams, but especially that specific team, they have dog-walked LSU. It hasn't been close. They've played them twice in the past 2 years, and they've beat them by a combined 40 points. LSU has two wins against Alabama in the last 15 years or something like that, or 14 years. It's embarrassing.
You know and who else has never beaten Bama?
Who's that? Kalen DeBoer.
Kiffin.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that one of the things, too, that we have seen that's very, very real from Lane Kiffin. I think he's a great coach. I think he's going to do really, really well at LSU. But here's something that we have seen time and time again from him. We saw him do it against Georgia a couple times at first. But every time he got on that stage against Nick Saban, something overtook him. And we saw with Kirby a lot against Saban, too. And maybe it's just Saban. Maybe it's not Bama. But there was something that happened in that game specifically where it's like they threw out so much of what they knew and what made them good head coaches in college football and just threw it out the window and was like the whole get your popcorn ready thing, and then we're going to go for it on fourth down 17 fucking times in that game and lose by 21. It is something. He got the Georgia monkey off his back. He's got to figure out a way to get the Bama one as well.
Yeah, he for whatever reason, he got tight against Saban.
Yeah.
Not the first time. They took it to him. And that was when Saban was like, they stole our signals. He had to make an excuse to why they scored 40 points on him or whatever.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad.
It's not good. It's not good.
Stealing signals as quick as they go. You know what?
I mean, I just feel like, dude, I'd say a big question about him too is like Sam Levitt, he has to be really, really good. Like Trinidad Chambliss was an epiphany. He was, what he was able to do after destined to be the backup at Ole Miss was incredible. And now, Jackson Dart was incredible. Matt Corral was awesome. You've had some really, really good quarterbacks in a row. And I think that a lot of that is because of how good of a QB coach Kiffin can be. But is Levitt going to be – here's another thing. Is Levitt coming from the Big 12? Are we confident that he's going to be able to, one, play all 12 games of the regular season against an SEC schedule and then also get through that? I would think so. And I still say that him missing the spring and having the kid they got from Elon and then also Longstreet from
Southern Cal.
A&M, and then with the Southern Cal. I think him taking all those reps and the kid from Elon splitting reps too in the spring is only going to make that quarterback room deeper and stronger. But there's still a lot of questions there too, man. That's one thing too that's one of the reasons I'm a big believer in Texas, even though this one guy in the comments is a total fucking douchebag. But I'm a big believer in Texas this year because they're the teams that have the fewest amount of question marks in this day and age, especially. That's a team I feel like I'll feel a lot more confident in the offseason, where you just don't have that many programs that are going into season after season with the same starting quarterback, the same coordinators, or anything like that.
Do you have more confidence in Texas or LSU to win it all?
Okay, what?
Texas or LSU? Who do you have more confidence in to win it all?
I think LSU, because I think they're deeper on both sides of the ball. Texas, I think, is going to be really, really good offensively. We'll see what Muschamp is able to do on defense. This is wild to me. And listen, I think it's easy to buy into the Muschamp thing because it's like he's been there before. He's been very successful before. He was fine at Georgia in the role that he had. But it's been a while since Will Muschamp has been, you know, stalking the sidelines as the defensive coordinator, as the guy. And we've been like, man, that guy's been, he is great, man. He really gets it. Like, it's been a while since that's happened.
I don't know if that's ever happened, has it? If you look at his career numbers.
I think,
I mean, not to say he's bad, but I don't know. That was the move of the offseason. Either it's going to result in a championship or it could blow up in their face.
I think the big thing, too, for the reason I believe in LSU is, one, I think you're right about what you just said. I'm still shocked they fired that DC. The thing that's going to that like the reason why I would believe in Kiffin over Sark, and I love Sark a ton. The reason why I believe in Kiffin is because Blake Baker's defense and the studs that he has in that unit that are coming back, I think they'd be really good. I keep looking at LSU and I say this, I feel like a lot where the kiddie pool is deep. What? Buddy, better question is, what are you doing near a kiddie pool, you fucking weirdo? I think that with what LSU has been able to do, and I think this is a big thing in this day of college football, that like it's great to be really good in the portal, but it's also still really good to be able to have retention. And what they were able to keep with Harlan Berry, Whit Weeks, DJ Pickett, Tre'Davious Green, those are all really, really good players that would have been around the top 50 in the country in the portal had they entered the portal. Then you talk about what they bring in with their talented recruiting class, which I think was outside the top 10 at like number 11. But you get two defensive linemen, Lamar Brown and then Richard Anderson. And I just think that they the way their roster is pieced together so well, there's a real argument to be made that the biggest question mark they have is at quarterback. And in every Lane Kiffin offense we have seen, regardless of who's been as quarterback, over the past couple of years, they haven't had an offense at Ole Miss that ranked outside of the top 13 nationally. That was the lowest they've ranked in the last 5 years in yards per game. I think they've been in the top 8 in 4 of the last 5 years. They're going to put up points. And again, I go back to like in some of these cases, like with South Carolina, I look at it and I say, all right, I think the defense is going to be really good because Clayton White has shown time and time again, he's a really, really good defensive coordinator. Tennessee, very similar. He can be a really, really good defensive coordinator with Jim Knowles. And there's a couple teams like that around the SEC where I say, if you can score 21, I think that they can hold the other team under 20 each and every week. Well, for LSU, I think that number probably balloons up to around 25 or 30 because I think that offense with Lane Kiffin and the talent they have are going to be able to put up points regardless.
Let me ask you this. Who do you got more confidence in next season? Two teams we haven't touched on, Oklahoma or A&M?
Oh, who do I have more confidence in?
Yeah, just next season.
Oh, fuck. That's tough. I
think I got them in a similar tier. Well, actually, I think I got Oklahoma slightly higher, but
yeah,
I could see A&M being there as well.
I think that's a perfect example in comp. Go back to, well, keep it here for a second. I see them starting 3-1, maybe 3-2 at worst. Oklahoma, they get South Carolina at home, so let's just say that they are just – I mean, yeah, I don't see them losing more than 4 games next year. They get A&M at home, which is really big.
It may come down to that game, A&M Oklahoma, you know?
Yeah. But I think with A&M's schedule, I don't know what Arizona State's gonna have. They got Cutter Bowley now, it's most likely their starting quarterback. They of course start out with the 3 home games. I think they lose it at LSU. I think they lose at Bama. And then the rest of that schedule, I don't think it's crazy far-fetched that they lose 3 of those last 4. So I believe in A&M because I think Marcel Reed's better than people think. It's also going to year 3 as a starter, man. I love Mike Elko. But again, they lost what made A&M so great this past year, Mike? Like offensively, because I think they were better offensively than they were defensively, which is kind of surprising because of Elko. Mm-hmm. But what made them so good? They were really, really good across the offensive line. And Marcel Reed had 2 really stud receivers that he was able to use in as weapons all year long. Well, one of those is gone, and he happens to be also a huge game changer, not just on offense, but also in the special teams and what he did in punt returning with Casey Concepcion being gone. And then the guy calling all the plays for them, is also gone. He's back at Kansas State, right? So, like, I think there's more question marks there. Whereas with Oklahoma, even with what they lost in the portal, man, what Oklahoma lost in the portal, they didn't lose anybody really of significance. They didn't lose anybody that would have projected to be a starter on the two deep at all. The offensive line is still very young and very, very talented. The defense, I think, is always going to be pretty good under Brent Venables. And now you get John Mateer, who is back and I would assume healthy, unless he's – I haven't heard any reports from the Chipotle worker that broke all the news last year. So I don't know if how healthy he is, but I would assume he's pretty healthy. And again, man, I they are going to be – in year two under Arbuckle, I think they'll probably be improved, and they just didn't lose anybody that's going to set them back a ton.
I mean, if we needed any further evidence that Oklahoma truly belongs in this conference, it was the fact that that damn Chipotle worker ran to the message board.
Dude, that was unbelievable.
As soon as he met with John Mateer.
That was the best, dude.
Bad. Hey, who's going to crash and burn, though? If there's one team where we're like, oh, man, oh, yeah, playoff, yeah, and then is it Ole Miss?
That's a good question. Hold on. Leave the schedule up here for a second. I think they lose to Georgia. I think they lose to Oklahoma. I think they lose to Texas. And I think they lose to LSU. There's some people that are very, very loud in their belief that Ole Miss is a top five team. I'm not seeing that. Trinidad Chambliss is awesome. Kewon Lacy is really good. Are we sure that Pete Golding is going to be a coach that's good enough to get his team to the playoff in year one as a head coach, especially with everything they lost? They lost their running backs coach. They lost their offensive coordinator. They lost their fucking head coach. They lost their best defensive player. Like they lost a couple other guys on defense as well. I love what they returned, but if I'm also being honest, like I think there was some important retention that they had to have, like with Lacey and Chambliss, obviously. I mean, the whole state now is just fucking making up the rules as they go. I don't know if you saw this today, but they're now not taxing the football players in the state of Mississippi. It's unfucking real. They're just, listen, and I will never be a person that's like, no, they should pay taxes, because I think all taxes are fucking stupid. It's absurd to me that we work all year and we get money taken out of every single fucking paycheck unless you work for yourself. And at the end of the year, you get the worst fucking math project ever from the government. They're like, how much do you owe us? Like, I don't know. You tell me. Like, no, you tell us. Otherwise, you're going to jail. And you're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? So anyway, that's my feeling on taxes. I do think that Ole Miss, I won't say they're going to crash and burn, because I don't think they're going to make the playoff anyway. But I think it'll be very interesting to see where they land in year one, because this is also a team. Maybe they're going to be great with Deuce Knight. I love the guy they brought in from East Carolina. I think he could be really good. But still, when South Carolina was potentially looking at him to be a guy that would step in as OC, I was all on board with it. I think he's put up a lot of good numbers in production at East Carolina. But when you're comparing him to the guy that was at South Carolina, like Mike Shula, that's an easy sell. If you're comparing him to Charlie Weiss and Lane Kiffin's offense, just like with most any other offense in the country, you're most likely going to take a step back, because that's how proficient and great those offenses were.
Is it true you've done hard time?
I've been to jail before.
That's not a hard time, though.
No, I
went. Just time.
I was in an overnighter one time, and it was fucking terrible. I hated it.
You and Shia down
there. I remember I had to go for something that I was like DDing for a friend, and I got pulled over, and there was something wrong with like a license or something. I had no idea about, like, from like a ticket from like 2 years ago. I was like, what? And they're like, we got to take you to jail. I was like, oh, okay, good one. And he's like, no, I'm serious. And I was like, so they took me to downtown Fulton County Jail. And I was like, I was DDing. Like, what is fucking happening? And I'll never forget, Mike, I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm very out of place. I'm in downtown Fulton County, Atlanta, Georgia, in jail. And I remember sitting there and it, like, they were like, you're going to be out in like 3 hours. You're fine. So the next morning rolls around. I'm not out of there in 3 hours. And they're giving out breakfast. And the breakfast was just a bologna sandwich with like mayonnaise and shit. And I was like, I hate bologna for one. And so they're handing them out. And I was like, I don't want to seem like a bitch and say no. So I was like, I'll just take it, not eat it. And so I take the sandwich, and this black guy behind me starts yelling at me and starts going, he's like, hey, hey, give me that sandwich. Ryan, white boy name, Ryan. And I was like, I can't turn around and be like, actually, it's Christopher. So that's not my name. It was terrible.
Did you give him the sandwich?
He said something about, are you too good for bologna? I said, we're all too good for bologna. And then I handed him the sandwich. And him and I are still boyfriend ever since. So there's
I knew that was coming. Hey, yeah. Any thoughts to Heupel? He came out here today and said he supports a 24 team playoff, and seen a lot of people are surprised by that. But hell, that's honestly, I think all these damn coaches, they just want more spots so they can get in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've just lost the plot so much of like, are we like what's best for the sport? I don't know.
Or did he give you the bologna?
There it is. Text up. Nothing funnier than sodomy, guys. Really proud of all of you in the comments. I think we've lost the plot so much. It's like I just always thought that going to six teams was the way to go. Like I thought that was the next iteration of this that should have made the most sense. And going from four to six, and then saying two teams get a bye and you play the other four, whatever. Or eight, and then, like, you know, just as well as I do, if you're doing that, whoever is at nine in an eight-game playoff is going to be pissed that they're ninth. Whoever's 13 now in a 12-game playoff is going to feel the same way. You're going to get to 24, and some asshole is going to be like, well, what about 25? Like, we have a top 25. Why wouldn't we just have 25? So I don't, it's not that I don't have an opinion on it, because my opinion was, hey, it should have never gone to 12 yet. Like, maybe then, like, in time, you figure out how to do this schedule correctly, then you can do that. But instead, what we've done is been like, let's just pile in as much fucking change as possible. And none of this really matters to fix it, or think that it should be fixed, because we're making so much fucking money that it doesn't, like doing the correct thing just doesn't matter anymore. And so the 2014 playoff, I don't fault Josh Heupel for saying that. There's a part of me that like the social media part of me that wants to have the low hanging fruit joke of like, you know, speaking of low hanging fruit in jail, the low hanging fruit joke of, hey, like he of course wants 24 teams because he wants Tennessee to get into the playoff. That's the only way they're going to get in. I mean, they made a 12 team playoff last year. I think they're good enough to compete for a 12 team playoff. I just don't know if it's going to matter at this point, because I think the Big Ten is so fucking money hungry about everything they want to do. And they've already forced the hand of the SEC to go to the nine conference games. And at some point, Mike, you're going to look at the SEC, and I think the doomsday scenario is you've gone to nine games. You're going to make a ton of money. It's going to be great television for SEC fans. But at the end of the season, you're going to look up and you're going to see those 9-3 teams from a couple years ago are going to be 8-4. The 10-2 games teams are going to be 9-3. And you're not going to have as many teams get into the playoff, because you're going to look at, well, Bama's 9-3, but there's a team in the Pac or the Big 12 that's 10-2. Like, are they more deserving? And I think you're going to start losing out on spots.
Hey, Steven Up, he gave us $10 for Marler to get some more bologna because he's full of it.
Bang. Bang.
Carl, appreciate you, buddy. 24 teams equals participation trophy.
I like Carl. Carl kind of rules.
Yeah, Carl does rule. And I agree with him 100%. I mean, yeah. If we just do away with what makes this sport awesome, the regular season, and make it even less meaningful, I think it hurts the whole sport.
So, and here's the thing too, is that I agree with you. And one of the things too, Mike, that I always loved about college football the most for such a long time was the season in and of itself was so precious. Like you had 11 games when I was growing up. That's how old I am. You had 11 games. And if you lost one of them, you were out. Like you most likely were out and you were done. And that sucked. Like that is frustrating. Then you move to 12 games, and unless you were Alabama, almost every time you lost one, you were out. And that is also very frustrating. So like I love that we're able to see some teams that go on a run. But like really, man, if you think about it, since they've expanded, two teams have won. One of them went 16-0 and it's a great story. The other one lost to fucking 7-5 Michigan in like when they were ranked, you know, in the top five, I think, and I'm assuming they were, and were one of the best teams in the country, only had a 1-point loss. They ended up winning the national championship and they were loaded. But it was like, dude, like part of me looks at this and says, if Ohio State, that's that specific team, if they're going to go out and spend $20 million on a roster, which at the time was one of the highest in the country, and then lose to 7-5 Michigan. Why the fuck do they get a spot in the playoff? And like, in the same way, if LSU goes, you know, loses to like a shitty Arkansas team this year, or a 7-5, I don't know, A&M or Ole Miss team or something like that. If that were to happen and they spent $40 million on the roster and still won a national championship, like that's just not, that doesn't feel like college football to me anymore. It just feels way too similar to the NFL, where it's like you're telling people like, you know, every week doesn't matter. And so that is frustrating to me, because that's not the sport that I grew up loving. I don't think there's a way to stop it. I think that's just what they're going to do moving forward. But still, I just don't love it.
This is the perfect comment from Stephen Up. Marler working for a moving company. You kind of do.
Do I? GCSU baseball, dog. Go Bobcats.
And hey, I think this is an excellent comment from Boja Blast. If they go 24, noted it.
Crybabies. Baja Blast, you idiot.
I can't see that. So. Oh, yeah, gotcha, Baja Blast. If 24, only if Notre Dame joins a conference. But in reality, if we go to 24, all we're doing is guaranteeing Notre Dame's in it every damn year.
Which we're already doing anyway. So I agree with that. They should have to join a conference. It's so fucking stupid. But again, it's really highlighted how many issues there are with like the sport itself, because you've allowed so many different conferences to govern themselves and not have to align with how other conferences are doing the same thing. And again, I still say this all goes back to the Big Ten and the Big 12 saying, we're going to go to 9 conference games. It wasn't to make their fan bases any happier. Like, I have a hard time believing that Big Ten fans are like, fuck yeah, dude. You're telling me that instead of only 8 weeks of Iowa Northwestern, I get 9 weeks? Like, fuck yeah. The Big Ten has always been the Big Three, and I know that Indiana had a great year this year, but you will always only find 3 teams in that conference that are worth the shit at most. And so I think that when they moved to 9 games, and then immediately, it's not that they moved to 9 games, it's like them and Notre Dame do this thing that is crazy to me, where they move all these things and the goalposts into a place that is only beneficial to them for their own benefit, for their own financial gain, for their own benefit in terms of like what it does for their scheduling and anything like that, for them to make the most money, to make the most playoffs, make the most postseason, whatever. All of those things that they do for their own benefit. And then once it doesn't benefit them as much as they hoped, and they don't win a national title or they don't make the playoff, it is like crying to everyone about, well, this isn't fair. We were 10-2. Well, you fucking have gotten away with everything if you're Notre Dame. The entire sport has been catered to Notre Dame since they were playing like you know, 11-game schedules against Ace Hardware in the fucking 30s, and they were claiming all those national titles. Like, it's a joke. And the same with the Big Ten. Like, you're the ones that wanted to go to 9 conference games for your own fucking financial gain. And then once you realize, well, I mean, the SEC is only playing 8 games. Why would they play 9? No one asked you to play 9. No one asked for another fucking weekend of Purdue Northwestern. No one asked for that. No one ever would ask for that. So it's frustrating to me that this has gotten so far. Like, it's instead of like moving forward in the sport, it's like, well, this team or this conference moved forward, and then this one took a step back, and then but this one's over here doing this, and it's like the Big 12 is doing fucking God knows what, and you're like, and the ACC too. And so now, instead of having anyone on the same level playing field, everyone's in fucking chaos, and it's just the Big Ten and the SEC still in this cold war of arguments and like and realignment and all this other shit. It's gotten so far out of hand.
Damn, yeah, that was beautifully said. As what was your? I thought you were joking. Billy did text us live during this show.
Yeah, well, what did he say? Is it about Creed?
You might want to mention Marler's side gig on Marler Monday. Are you like a male stripper or something? What's going on here?
No, but I will tell you this. I love Billy Lucci to death. He's a great dude. He's one of my favorite people in this industry. He is a walking smile and a walking good time. He's a party on two legs. But I texted him asking for help on a fucking assignment I had to do about A&M for work. And I was like, hey, man, can you help me out with this? I only need 2-3 things, just a tidbit or a quote that I can throw in the article. His response was, hey, weird beard. And I was like, well, no one's called me that before. So now it's going to be ingrained in my head. I'm going to be super insecure about it. And then I was like, do I have a weird beard? And he's like, no, I didn't. Well, I don't know. I didn't mean it like that. And then I just didn't hear from him. And then like 5 days after the article had posted, he's like, hey, dude, sorry, I forgot to respond to you. Here's my info. And I was like, I don't need it. I already posted it. And then he just sent me all the info. And I was like, All right, Bill.
Well, I think well said, Weird Beard. I think that's your new nickname. We're going to call this Marler Weird Beard Monday.
I love it. I love it.
Hey, last thing I got for you. Any highlights from this would have been your first Mardi Gras down there, right? How was that?
Dude, so we had a blast. I keep saying this, man. This state is so fucking not conducive to losing any sort of weight for the wedding. I'm still down. I think it's 19 pounds. I think I was 20 pounds a couple weeks ago. So I think I've gained like 1 pound. Rutgers, Minnesota. I would rather live in Iran right now. I would rather live in Iran right now than have to fucking be subjected to 3 hours of Rutgers, Minnesota. If you told me right now you can either live in Iran for three hours or you have to watch on your television without your phone or any distractions Rutgers, Minnesota football, I would probably go to Iran. Anyway,
I think old Ari agrees with you.
God, he fucking sucks. We had a great time here for Mardi Gras. Now it's crawfish season, which Ooh. Is like, it's so funny down here because everyone, it's, I've lived in Atlanta. I've lived in like other places around the Southeast. I've lived in like big cities. Like there's a lot of stuff always going on, but here everything is just like somehow always themed around parties. Like everything is a party and a themed party. And so on Saturday, we had one of the best days I've fucking had in forever. We got like a cooler full of cold beer. Just me and Allie went and got 5 pounds of crawfish and you know, sausage and corn and potatoes and all that kind of shit. And we just sat here and listened to some like 90s country on Saturday night and hung out and ate a fuck ton of crawfish. It was the best day ever. So,
damn, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Also, the instructions for eating a crawfish are it's the most sexual game of bop it you've ever heard. It's just like, yeah, just twist it, pull it, suck it, eat it. And you're like, ooh, that's a lot.
I don't think I've ever had that.
Crawfish?
I don't believe I have. No.
You need to come to Baton Rouge at some point. You should come down here for a baseball weekend. And like I said, like, I don't want you staying anywhere near us, but like you also, you would love it. We've got to do a crawfish thing.
All right, we'll do it. All right, I think that's all I got. I think I had one more thing, but I can't. Oh, yeah, here it is. Good look, I think. Is this a good look? I think this, I'm going to ask him later. Someone gave Steven a stash here. I think that's the look he should go for.
I actually kind of like that.
That's what I'm saying, right?
He looks like a character on I Think You Should Reel. Like he's like, yes. Make sure you guys tune in tonight, 7 p.m. for his show.
Before you go, hey, plug your socials and your all your other jobs you got.
Locked On Gamecocks. We're in March now, so it's time for women's basketball. Very fired up for that because the tournament starts on a Wednesday. Spring ball actually starts on Wednesday as well. Mike's one of my friends. Most of our arguments are just jokes. Also, dude, I felt so bad about this. I'm not going to plug myself on social right now, but Josh Pate, sometimes I just forget that I'm just joking around with a friend, and he tweeted out something about, who's the most hated team in college football? And I was like, you. And then immediately afterwards, I was like, I should not have fucking wrote that. I should not have wrote that, because everyone's like, yeah, oh, no. Like, I don't, okay, it's not, it's just a joke. Anyway, we got to start talking about baseball, too.
It's that time of year, isn't it? But we got to focus on bat. Now that there's two games left in basketball, I've shifted gears to fully talking basketball. But
not really.
But all right, hey, we'll catch you next week. Thank you.
See you, dude.
Bye bye.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.